Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said, everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up. Don't be so rough, but you got to be tough when you do your stuff. Hey!
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Congress College. I want to thank John Krupe for helping me with my technical difficulties. You are listening to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Chris, and I want to thank you in advance for spending 30 minutes of your week time, your Monday, to catch up on all things Congress. If you guessed it, Congress College is all about the comings and goings, the ups and downs, the ins and outs about Congress. We air twice weekly on the Monday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now. This is when we talk about what will actually get up on the House of the Representatives. What will the Senate of the United States actually be debating? And then on the Friday show, same time slot, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, this is when we recap the week and we talk about what exactly got done. What did the Senate of the United States end up debating? How about the House of Representatives? Did they end up debating what they said they were going to debate? And, you know, I do the show twice weekly so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because think about it. I say this all the time. We have the greatest representative government in the world. We really do. Yes, we've got warts. Yes, we've got problems, a lot of problems right now, actually. But the system itself is amazing. I always challenge people, tell me a better government system. Is it Germany? Is it England? Is it France? Is it China? I think we have the greatest. But we have to pay attention. We have to know what's going on. We have to know what our representatives are doing because they're speaking for you. They're speaking for me. So that's one of the reasons I do the show. Another reason is to familiarize you with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com lets you grade a member of Congress. How about your member of Congress? What would you give him or her? Would you give him an F? Would you give him a C? Well, you can do just that. The grades we're talking about, of course, are the A, B, C, D, or F, just like the grades we got in school. First, you figure out who you want to grade. Then you figure out what grade you want to give them, and then the site will prompt you to write a letter explaining why you gave the grade. I always urge this. Check your spelling, because you know what, folks? I'm a horrible speller. And then once you click send, you have just graded a member of Congress and you've written them a letter and they see it. I say this often. Members of Congress are constantly going over to gradegov.com to see what their grade is. But also, GradeGov works hard to keep email addresses in all of the House members and all of the senators' offices. So your grade and your letter go to somebody in Washington, D.C., someone on Capitol. So they do see the grade, they do see the letter. So I urge you to tell your friends, tell your family, heck, tell your foes about gradegov.com. I would really, really appreciate it. All right, let's get started. We're going to start out this segment with the Senate. Did you hear what Harry Reid said? I'm not making this up. I teased it out that Harry Reid loved Donald Trump. He said this Sunday that the Democrats are, quote, fairly certain to regain control of the Senate in November. He said it on a show called The Cats Roundtable. It's a radio show on AM 970 in New York and in Washington. Reid said that Trump appears certain to win the Republican presidential nomination. And, of course, in his mind, if Trump is the Republican nominee, he thinks that Trump's presence on the ticket will boost the Democrats' down ticket. In other words, the races down past the president and the vice president, the Senate, the House, the governors. He thinks it will boost those down, and the polls say that Republican candidates will really be hurt by Donald Trump. I don't know that I believe that. I don't know that I actually believe that. I'm going to quote Harry Reid here for a second. I can't imagine how the establishment Republicans feel about somebody who's about as far from anything that anyone believes in as Donald Trump. I can't imagine this man being the nominee for any political party, let alone the Republican Party. Well, first of all, I think that's obviously a jab at Donald Trump. Like, he's such a bonehead, I don't know how anybody could vote for him. But again, I'm going to go back to his premise that the down ballot, the candidates in the down polls, in the down ballot, that they will be hurt. First of all, I just don't understand that. If a lot of people vote for Donald Trump, a lot of people vote basically straight ticket. And there's a lot of polls that say Donald Trump is now going to beat Hillary Clinton if he is the nominee. So don't quite get where Harry Reid is coming from. But we know this. Congress College listeners know this. John Krupe knows this. It's only a 4-vote swing if the Senate majority loses 4 Republican seats. In other words, if Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats gain 4 or more, they could be in the majority. It's only 54 to 46. Take away 4 from the Republicans, that's 50. Give it to the Democrats, makes them 50. Presidency, a 50-50 Senate arrives, and you've got the vice president presiding over the Senate. There you've got a Senate majority. Now, what if Donald Trump wins or Ted Cruz wins and they still lose seats? Well, that's a real possibility. I know Congress College listeners know this number off the top of their head. 24 Senate Republicans are trying to defend their seats so they can come back and be a senator next January. 24 of them. How many Senate Democrats are trying to come back next time around? Only 10. That's just the way the cards fell this year. 24 Senate Republicans to 10 Senate Democrats. And, you look at those 10 Senate Democrats, they're strong, strong, strong blue states for the most part. And some of the 24 Senate Republicans are blue-ish states. They've been blue recently. They've been blue in the recent past. Remember, these senators are there for 6 years. It could have been red 6 years ago when the senator was elected. Now it's turned blue, and they're panicking. And Harry Reid is trying to make that panic seem even more real by saying, "Are you kidding me, Donald Trump?" Quote again, "I can't imagine this man being the nominee for any political party, let alone the Republican Party." But we'll just see about that. We'll obviously see about that as the convention gets closer, as the primary tomorrow in Indiana, which they say is make or break for Ted Cruz to win, to hold on to any chance of being able to stop Donald Trump from getting 1,237 between now and the end of June. So we'll see. Tomorrow's D-Day, Indiana. If you have any friends, family in Indiana, tell them to vote. At least they can do is vote. Remember, we have the greatest representative government, but it has to be represented by you. You've got to play a part. You've got to be a part of our representative government. Or let's go over to the House side. The Democrats say they might be interested in reining in huge parts of the Dodd-Frank, too big to fail, financial disclosure, financial all fix-it bill that was passed, gosh, what, 5 years ago? Tom Emmer. He's a Republican from Minnesota. He has been seeking congressional oversight of two huge agencies that are part of the Dodd-Frank too big to fail. These are the self-funding agencies that run and handle a ton of regulations. There's 10 presidential appointees on them. These are, when I say self-funded, they come from fees that the federal government charges banks. Banks have to pay them. He passed, Congressman Emmer's passed an end to their self-funding status. He did this in April. It was 179. He only got one vote from the Democrats. But that's going to be a tough bill to pass in the Senate. It's going to be a really tough bill to pass in the Senate. This is quoting the congressman. I can tell you, the Democrats I've talked to, we have had a bunch of support, even though we don't get their support on the floor. Ultimately, we have an obligation to provide congressional oversight. And the Democrats that I've talked to, when we've had this discussion, they not only agree on that, but they've made a point of, if there's a Republican president, how happy they are going to be if it continues that way. These agencies are the Financial Stability Oversight Council and the Office of Financial Research. Both of them determine which companies regulate systematically important financial institutions on the basis of the risk they pose to financial stability. Their funding exceeded $8 million in 2016. And as I said, it comes from assessments levied on banks. We'll see. We'll see. We'll see if a Republican gets the presidency and if there are bills in the House to pare down the Dodd-Frank too big to fail bill, if there are Democrats that help support getting rid of some of these huge agencies that are nothing but headaches. If you've got friends in the banking industry, you've heard of this. If you've got friends that have ever worked in any kind of mortgage type company, you've heard of these. You've heard of these agencies and you've heard that they are a big pain in the rear end. You know, a lot of people say the council exceeded its boundaries. Critics say that there was a federal judge reversing the council's claims that they went overboard. They're spending millions, people say, and this is taxpayers' dollars. Even though they're collected through assessment, basically it's taxpayers' dollars. The money comes from individual customers, so they're ultimately paying the bill. They're paying the bill for the federal government to be a complete pain with banks. And in my estimation, the little banks, the real small community banks, you know, I think most people know we live in a small community in Central Florida. So there are a few community banks here in Central Florida, but for the most part, most of them have dried up and blown away. Well, they haven't actually blown away. They've been bought by the bigger banks. Why is that? Because they could not afford to hire the battery of lawyers it is required now to navigate all the different regulations that come from agencies like this Financial Stability Oversight Council and the Office of Financial Research. They can't afford a whole team of lawyers to navigate that. So they just said, anybody want to buy us? Buy us. And people bought their assets. So the too big to fail, the Dodd-Frank too big to fail, in my estimation, created nothing but big bank conglomerates for the most part. All right, take a listen to this. I was made aware of this today. It is a new website. It's called OpenRNC. It's going to let everybody, you and me, sort of walk our way through the Republican convention, learn the rules, learn behind-the-scenes stuff Take a listen to this. This is a little over a minute. It sounds exciting to me.
So what is up with the Republican convention? It seems like nobody believes anybody anymore. Should we care about votes or delegates? Who's making the rules? Who's calling the shots? Who's telling the truth? Are a bunch of political power brokers just going to cozy up in Cleveland, cut a few deals, and come out with a nominee? Well, a lot of people believe that's exactly what's going to happen. But this decision is too important to watch it devolve any further than it already has. Enough is enough. So, where can you find out what's really going on? OpenRNC. OpenRNC is the only place to find reliable, real-time breaking news, plus all the stats, the schedules, the behind-the-scenes scoop, and most importantly, legitimate analysis from an expert panel that includes the people who actually wrote the convention rules and know more about convention strategy than anyone else in the country. The process by which we select our nominee shouldn't be secret. So let's talk about it loudly, clearly, and without compromise. Join us online at openrnc.com. No agenda, no bias, no bull.
I urge you to go to openrnc.com. Take a peek at it and maybe bookmark it for when the convention comes up. It'll help you navigate the convention, hopefully. I look forward to also being a part of that, and I wish all those folks well. All right, here we go. Did you hear what Bernie Sanders said? He vows to contest the Democrat convention. He said on Sunday that he will continue his challenge to Hillary Clinton, even at the party's convention in July. Listen to Bernie. This is about 2 minutes. See if you feel the burn after you listen.
We don't know what's going to happen in Indiana. We don't know what's going to happen in the line of this race. We don't know what's going to happen before the election. But look,
you'll be able to hear it in a minute.
A year ago. And before I talk about it, it is virtually impossible for Secretary Clinton to reach the majority of convention delegates by June 14th with pledged delegates alone. She will need superdelegates to take her over the top at the convention in Philadelphia. In other words, the convention will be a contested contest. Currently, Secretary Clinton has 1,645 pledged delegates, 55% of the total. We have 1,318 pledged delegates, 45% of the total. There are 10 states remaining where we're going to be vigorously competing, plus the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, and Guam. We believe that we are in a very strong position to win many of these remaining contests, and we have an excellent chance to win in California, the state with far and away the most delegates. For us to win the majority of pledged delegates, we need to win 710 out of the remaining 1,083. That is 65% of the remaining pledged delegates. That is admittedly, and I do not deny it for a second, a tough road to climb, but it is not an impossible road to climb. And we intend to fight for every vote in front of us and for every delegate remaining.
Okay, there you have it. That's Bernie Sanders saying he's going to contest their election in July. He said, this was at the D.C. press conference, he said that he will contest it, and he believes that he can push superdelegates that are behind Clinton to support him during the nomination process. Does this sound at all familiar, deja vu all over again? Obama led Clinton in delegates won back in 2008, but Clinton claimed that she had the popular vote, and she claimed she had the superdelegates. And, you know, here's the deal with the superdelegates. You can't really calculate. It's almost impossible to confirm until the convention the superdelegates. And these superdelegates only belong to the Democrats. I'm betting that Republicans at times wish they had superdelegates, but we do not. The Republican convention does not have superdelegates. They were created by the Democrats after the 1972 McGovern debacle. Senator McGovern ran for president, seemed very popular, was going to end the war, blah, 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 anti-war, and he lost to Nixon in a huge landslide. McGovern only won Massachusetts and D.C. So the Democratic Party created superdelegates, which are members of the House, members of the Senate, governors, members of the Democratic National Committee, party leaders, and they are pretty much dictated to how they're supposed to vote. As I said, it's really hard to nail down superdelegates because they're uncommitted until the convention. They may publicly endorse somebody. And, you know, if you kind of whiteboard it all out and you write down each state and write down what the governor's done, what the House member's done, what the senator's done, et cetera, you might be able to figure it out. But most news organizations, they survey superdelegates periodically throughout the election cycle and they try to calculate, but it's ever changing. It's really ever changing. So what happened to Hillary is she claimed that she had all the superdelegates, and we all know the rest of the story. She didn't, and Obama won, and by the middle of June, she was endorsing him. So let's see how that's going to play out. I want to play this for a second. This is President Obama at the Correspondents' Dinner. This is pretty good, talking about Hillary. Then we're going to talk a little bit about some state stuff.
Bernie's slogan has helped his campaign catch fire among young people. Feel the burn. Feel the burn. It's a good slogan. Hillary's slogan has not had the same effect. Let's see this. I've said how much I admire Hillary's toughness, her smarts, her policy chops, her experience. You've got to admit it, though. Hillary trying to appeal to young voters is a little bit like your relative who just signed up for Facebook. Yeah. Dear America, did you get my poke? Is it appearing on your wall? I'm not sure I'm using this right. Love, Aunt Hillary.
Her age, poking fun at her age. All right, I promised we'd flip over for a minute to some state news. And this is, if you're a Republican, this is a little scary. You know, the Dems don't have control of hardly any state legislatures like they used to. They don't have hardly any governors, not like they used to. You know, 34, 35 Republican governors. Many big mayoral positions are no longer Republican. So, what are they doing trying to get some of their major initiatives passed? How are they doing this? Ballot measures. Ballot measures. Ballot initiatives aren't just seriously about issues. They're used to help get out the vote. If you want to get young voters out, put a marijuana initiative on the ballot and they'll vote. How about minimum wage? Put that on a ballot, and they'll likely come out and vote. Because there are fewer avenues for the Democrats to change laws. Sure, they do it by judges, legislating from the bench. We know how Obama does it. He just changes regulations, changes definitions, reworks a policy, changes its basic for a basic outcome so that it can be whatever he wants it to be. But if you're in the state legislature and you don't have a majority, you haven't had a governor in a while, what do you do? What about state initiatives? What about trying to get something on the ballot? Liberty Ballot Initiative. That's a new strategy company. And they're saying people are recognizing that their legislatures aren't helping them on issues. So they're trying to figure out how to go to the ballot. And they got people in this company that will teach you and show you how. You know what's interesting, though? And this is something I did not know. How you figure out the percentage of how many people you need to sign some kind of initiative to get something on the ballot. You have to collect the number of signatures that is equal to a percent of the vote cast in the last election. That sounds like, oh my gosh, that would be a ton of people. Well, here's the deal, folks. In 2014, the number of votes cast in that election was the lowest it's been since World War II. So you could have a pretty busy ballot initiative this year. Because as I said, the Democrats are running out of ways to get their stuff enacted, to get their policies enacted. So don't be surprised when you go to the ballot box that there are tons and tons of ballot initiatives sitting on your ballot as you go to vote. How about student loans? Remember when the State of the Union, the president called for free tuition for community colleges? Well, the vice president has announced that he will offer $100 million in grants for free community colleges. He's done this by taking some other law, some other student aid law that's on the books, and rejiggered it, changed it, and redirected some of the money. This is what they're good at, folks. This is what they're good at. And we've got to watch it. Because here's the deal. Free college is a great wedge issue. You know, Stan Greenberg, who's a Democratic pollster, he thinks that the biggest wedge issue that Democrats have needs to involve three key groups. And this is for the House to regain the Senate and to win the White House. Unmarried white women without college degrees, and millennials. He thinks if he can get the majority of those three, that he might actually be able to capture the White House for the Democrats and regain the Senate and maybe even the House. That's why Bernie Sanders is campaigning for these themes. That's why he's doing so well. Because getting rid of student loan by way of giving free college helps families get rid of just overall debt. So free college, free college, free college. Here it comes. Thanks to the Obama administration. Okay, get your paper, get your pencil. I do this at every airing of Congress College. Here's the president's daily schedule for today. At 10 o'clock, the president received the daily briefing in the Oval Office. And at 2:45, he is interviewed by local television anchors participating in something called Live from the White House. That is it, folks. That is your president hard at work for you and me. You know, I do this all the time so people can understand. Google your favorite past president and look up his daily schedule. Look up an average Monday, and I guarantee you will see from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, almost every 15 or 30 minutes filled with meetings, conference calls, et cetera, but not this president. All right, folks, thanks again for letting me take part of your Monday. I'm going to leave you with a Gloria Gaynor song. I Will Survive. This is in honor of Hillary. You think she will survive? Anyway, enjoy last week.
First I was afraid. I was petrified. Kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights thinking, hey,